The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
And what's wrong with a few matinees? Hello and good morning. I'm beginning to develop a Garth phobia, to be honest with you. And it just occurs to me, is he now looking for a place in Enda's cabinet? He's certainly keen to see him so Daddy can fix it.
And if the Prime Minister himself wants to talk to me, I will crawl, swim, I will fly over there this weekend. Sit in front of him, I will drop on my knees and beg for those 400,000 people to just have fun and let him come sing.
Flip your wings and fly to your daddy. Take a dive and swim to your daddy. Hit the floor and crawl to your daddy.
Daddy, read the rhythm of life, 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 life.
Yeah. Yeah! Let me hear it!
Yeah. Who's your sexy daddy?
Let it all hang out!
Go on, Daddy, indeed. Now, this morning, we're reflecting not on Garth Brooks and the continuing doubts about his upcoming gigs, but we're reflecting on the biggest sporting event on the planet, the World Cup. Did you watch every minute of it? If so, please tell us your highlights at 51551. And maybe you went through the month without watching a minute of it. We want to hear from you too. Text us at 51551. We'll be reflecting on some of the more memorable moments over the last few weeks, like this one.
You can see the level of expectancy. You can see the level of expectancy.
Oh, yeah. No, I think I mean, when Neymar was shaping up to take that penalty, I thought he was fucking dreading it. Sorry.
We're on air.
Oh, we're not, are we?
We are. Well, I apologise for that, but obviously...
I'm sorry.
That was an inexactitude. All right, let's get our final predictions.
Yes, and that inexactitude, as Bill calls it, led to this.
Now, before the game, you might have heard the use of an unfortunate word, so I'll hand you over to Eamon.
I'd just like to apologise to anybody. I thought we were on an ad break, and I used a four-letter word. I'm very, very sorry for the offence. I'm sure I caused to some people. It won't happen again.
Glad to hear it. There you go now. Some of our World Cup memories. If you have one particular ones, text us 51551. Fiona Looney, good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you?
And you have been our World Cup correspondent while you've been sitting...
For my sins, after a fashion, yeah. I'm just laughing at that clip. That feels now like a year ago, doesn't it?
It does, actually, yes.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that was BG, before Garth. So, you know, everything, I think in this World Cup, you can measure everything by BG and AG, before Garth and after Garth.
Very good.
So some of the stuff feels very ancient at this stage, and I think that's one of the ones. So it's good to hear.
It does. It happened all of a few weeks ago. And I'm just wondering, is Garth Brooks big news in Spain, Fiona?
Yeah, not entirely on the tip of everyone's lips. It's been fascinating watching this unfold and being abroad. And obviously there's a lot of concern about our international reputation. To be honest, I kind of think it's just us and about 10 people in Nashville who are talking about this. But look, you know, that's enough, isn't it, to be going on with?
That's true. But did you buy tickets for Garth, or were you going to give it a skip?
No, I wouldn't be a natural part of the Garth Brooks fan club now, I have to say. Though, frankly, if he's willing to crawl all the way to Ireland, as he said there at the top of the programme, I'd go and see that. Definitely pay to see that.
Now, you've been reflecting on the last few weeks for us, Fiona, and you're going to give us some of the good, the bad and the brilliant from the 2014 World Cup. Who would you have as man of the tournament, or hero of the tournament?
Well, do you know what? I mean, the one that I'm going to pick is maybe not the most obvious. He's not a player who is going to be featuring in the last couple of games. But just for being extraordinary and with an extraordinary backstory, I'm going to go for Tim Howard, the American goalkeeper, the American and Everton goalkeeper, who put in, I mean, he was brilliant throughout the tournament, but his final performance in the game against Belgium, 16 saves, every one of them, absolute cracker. And then it obviously emerged, and some of us knew it beforehand, but that he had Tourette syndrome and has Tourette syndrome. Just makes him just an extraordinary kind of, I mean, you know, you don't want to use the word poster boy, but to realise that a player can perform at that level with that level of disability, it was an astonishing eye-opener. Mm. So I'm going to go for Tim Howard.
Okay, Tim is the man of the tournament from your perspective. And what about the other highlights for you, Fiona? You were particularly taken by the white lines, I believe.
Well, you know, there was always a danger with the South American World Cup that we would end up talking about white lines at one point, but we never expected to see them sprayed on the pitch. And, you know, frankly, I'll never view the tin of shaving foam in the bathroom, not mine, I need to point out. You know, I'll never view it again without thinking, I just draw a little line. Just, you know, the great ones are kind of putting out a fight with the kids. You know, run in at the last minute, white line down the middle, it'll disappear in a few minutes, but in the meantime, business done that side.
Break them up, in other words. Your favourite team of the tournament, Fiona?
Like a lot of people, Costa Rica. And I wouldn't have thought going in, they were a lovely surprise. And I think they reminded us a lot of a certain other plucky 3 million strong nation from 1990 who also managed to get into the last eight. So for reminding us of our own former glory and for just being wonderful and unexpected, I'm going for Costa Rica.
Fair news, yeah. I think they did, yeah, capture the imagination anyway. And as you say, comparisons, I think, would have been accurate with Ireland and back in 1990 and what we did and didn't do. And what about the low points for you, Fiona? Were there some?
Well, I suppose the Suarez thing, which again, you know, that's BG. It's before Garth. So again, it feels like ages ago now. But it was certainly the controversy of this World Cup. And it's going to be fascinating now, you know, going on, looking into what's coming up in the next season, where you've got Barcelona will basically have Lionel Messi, Neymar and Suarez, the three most talked about players in the tournament. And, you know, they're all going to be on the same team, which is fascinating. Poor old Neymar, you know, when you think that he was on the cover of every kind of preview magazine, we thought he was going to be banned at the tournament. And you know what? He might just have been it, if it hadn't been for that incredibly unfortunate accident, you know, intentional takedown.
Yes, he's not. He's not describing it as an accident at all. He's very upset with his tackler.
Yeah,
with his Colombian tackler.
Well, understandably. Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's finishing out the World Cup in hospital with a cracked vertebrae. And you know, I found the collapse of Brazil very, very difficult to watch. I tipped them going into the tournament like a lot of people, and you know, we never saw them really put on, but once they lost Neymar in the semi-final against Germany, it was actually difficult to watch. The only consolation, I think, that we could take from it is that technically we're better than Brazil, because Germany only beat us 6-1,
maybe
Brazil 7-1. So there's something there for us to take away.
There is, certainly. And you were a big fan of the tattoos, Fiona. You pointed this out to us earlier, but you really found that this was compelling viewing during the World Cup.
Well, compulsive reading during the World Cup. I mean, you know, like people talk about reading the game. We never thought we'd be reading the player much. I love the guy. I don't know whether you heard about this. The Chilean, one of the Chilean players who missed the penalty. Well, he had a penalty saved in the penalty shootout that ultimately put Chile out of the competition. A guy called Maurizio Pinilla. And he, just the other day, got a new tattoo on his back, which has 1 centimetre from glory written on it. So, I mean, the tattoos are extraordinary. A lot of young men walking around with "Only God Can Judge Me" written on their arms. And, you know, when I see that, I always kind of think, well, no, I'm judging you on the basis of that. So, you know, but yeah, it was undoubtedly the World Cup of tattoos. And another little tiny thing that I learned about the tattoos, or indeed lack of them, which I never knew before, Cristiano Ronaldo does not have any tattoos. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no.
And you know why? And this is going to make him go up in your estimation. Most people don't like Cristiano Ronaldo. He's a regular blood donor, and you can't give blood I think the rule is you have to be 6 months after a tattoo before you give blood. So because he's a frequent blood donor, he has made a decision not to get tattooed.
Well, he's gone up in my estimation.
It's worth getting a tattoo about, isn't it?
He's gone up in everyone's estimation after that. And you mentioned these tattoos and what they were saying. God actually featured quite strongly in the World Cup. There was a lot of praying done before, during and after games. Did you notice that?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's the whole, you know, there's no atheists in a foxhole. I think there was, you know, that was very much, you know, evident. And, you know, again, you have a lot of South American teams. They're very passionate. They call upon whoever helps them. And if it's God, you know, the only thing you would have to say is that, you know, God ultimately, I'm not sure it's worth praying to God when you're playing football, because he's terribly partisan. And, you know, like, if God was a Brazil supporter, then it's done and dusted. But God's very fickle. You know, he changes teams as we go. And here we are looking into a final with Argentina and Germany. And for all that we kind of set out, particularly in the first round when the goals were coming from most unexpected sources and everyone was saying, oh, you know, this is going to be fascinating. And it was fascinating. But ultimately, was there an upset? You know, the last four in the competition were really kind of, there were no surprises, no raised eyebrows. So God was very partisan, I think, ultimately. Probably very fair.
Yes, I think that's the way to be. And what about the Dolly Birds, Fiona?
I loved the Dolly Birds. I know as a woman I'm meant to go down with that sort of thing, but I loved the fact that it was as if the director, and bear in mind these were filmed by South American crews, by local crews, and it was as if they scanned the crowd in advance. And, you know, just identified all the pretty girls, possibly moved around them saying, would you mind putting on that bikini top? You know, because they just looked styled. They looked as if they'd been planted. It reminded me a bit of watching Top of the Pops back in the 1970s when they'd get the really pretty girls from the audience to stand surrounding some, frankly, very dodgy characters when we look back on it. But, it was great that, like, you know, if you watched the World Cup in snapshots of the crowd, you would have thought that everyone at the World Cup was sort of 6 foot tall, leggy, very beautiful, very tanned, and wearing a bikini, which wasn't really the case.
That's true. And actually, I read yesterday that a young Belgian woman who appeared during one game in the crowd has been offered a modelling deal.
Oh, I didn't know that. Fantastic.
No,
they were gorgeous. They were gorgeous, yeah. I thought it was a shame that the game that's on tomorrow night, which happily I'll be on an airplane for, because I never understand the point in the third place playoff match. I think I've always thought it's quite a cruel thing to do to players. You know, they should adopt the Olympic model of, like, you know, where you have the boxing or whatever, where you have silver and two bronze. You know, you don't oblige the two losing semi-finalists to slug it out one more time. And, you know, I feel really sorry now for the boys from Brazil and from Holland who, you know, at the end of their match, they should have been told, listen, lads, the jacuzzi is there, the champagne is on ice, and you can have the Dolly Bird of your choice from tonight's game in that jacuzzi. Instead of which, it's back to the ice bath, back to the training ground, and we're going to make you go through the humiliation of playing all over again, and no one's going to even watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Although it'll probably be a sellout because Brazil are involved and they'll be looking for a bit of redemption, but we'll wait and see. I agree with you on that. The third and fourth playoffs, very cruel on the two losing teams. Well, Fiona, what are you going to do post-World Cup now? Have you a plan?
I'm thinking of taking up professional football, but obviously I have to get my body tattooed from head to toe first. I was thinking of the Dolly Bird angle. And I have the bikini, frankly. I'm here in Spain, so I could do that. But you know, I took one look in the mirror this morning and I thought, no, go tattoos, go professional football. So, yeah, I'll start with Shamrock Rovers and see where I go from there.
All right, Fiona, listen, thank you for joining us. And thank you for joining us during the course of the World Cup. And enjoy the rest of your holiday in Spain. Thanks a lot. And that's Fiona Looney there joining us from Spain. Now, we're also joined this morning by psychologist Dr. Ian Gargan, who has been struggling to leave his couch and TV for the past month. Ian, good morning.
Morning, John. How are you?
And I believe you had a high level of addiction to the World Cup over the last 2 weeks.
I completely addicted, yeah. I love the initial part, the first part where the group games are on. I almost like I fitted into my daily routine. I had to get home from work and be there for the perfect timing that was South American with the time zones that were there for the evening. Just had your whole evening planned out. So I started to miss it already when the group games finished and you didn't get to see it every day, but completely addicted. It was great. It would be very bittersweet moment for me on Sunday when it finishes.
Yeah, question I asked Fiona, what will you do? Have you a plan?
Don't really have a plan. I don't think tattoos or professional football is really going to happen for me now at this stage, but I think I always start looking to the next thing, John. So like I'll be thinking about the championship or like, you know, football in a few weeks, or I'll be thinking, you know, Ryder Cup or Premier League. So I almost start moving on to the next thing straight away, so just so I can fulfill or like fill something in my time with sport. Has to be, I have sport in my life every week, so I'll have to look to the next thing. Yes. But I love the fact that we're like, you almost want to get to the next year in 2015, because you realise like then it won't be so long to the next World Cup. I have so many childhood memories from like old World Cups, and this one is just going to stand out in memory as well. I thought it was a fantastic championship so far.
You have it bad, in other words, Ian. And our interest in the World Cup, because obviously we didn't qualify, but I don't know, I get the impression that half the nation, well, maybe more than half the nation, was watching the games over the last few weeks. It was like a human drama unfolding.
Yeah, I think there's real melodrama in the World Cup or any big championship like that. That's perennial every 4 years, because it also gives us a sense of mortality, you know, what you were doing 4 years ago, or you have childhood memories when you had big magic moments and watching the World Cup. But the last few weeks, I think just with the South American culture and the heat and it being like really summery, the backdrops when the pundits were talking about the matches and just the characters, and it's a real leveler. I think everyone gets to talk about it every day. Everyone is interested in it. And there's something in me that thinks I almost enjoy the World Cup more when Ireland aren't in it, because I'm not as stressed. So I think you kind of, you can put your focus onto another player, onto other teams, whereas when Ireland are in it, of course we love them to be in it. It'd be brilliant if they're in every World Cup. But, you know, this year, you're prepared for them not being in it, so you don't have the stress and anxiety of wondering how they're going to go on, or the disappointment if they don't. So in a way, that added to my World Cup. But it, like, tremendous stories, and I think this one was one of the best.
Do you think so? And what about the stories? What were the main stories from your perspective?
Well, I think I love the Costa Rican story, getting through, like Fiona was talking about, you know, very similar to ourselves, and that the size of the country is around 4 million. And Navas, the Costa Rican goalkeeper, I thought was like just a great character and completely put his body on the line. I loved that. The Suarez story, you know, even the other night, you know, I was watching when Argentina and Holland, and Mascherano, I was almost like shouting at the television because it's a story, but like it just gets you going, you know. The fact that he was clearly concussed the other night. And in any other sport, there's been a lot of controversy with that in rugby, and like I deal a lot with rugby in Lansdowne, and you know, and there's been a lot of controversy about concussion in football and letting players go back on the pitch. Now, he shouldn't have gone back on the pitch. He's concussed, clearly concussed, and yet he came back on the pitch and he made like a phenomenal defensive move that saved or prevented Robin scoring a goal. So, you know, for me, even like every game seemed to have certain story, John, and was like always something exciting or something new happening. There was very rarely a dull game.
You're talking there about a bit of heroism, the likes of Mascherano coming back after that injury, that knock on the head he got. And does sport, do events like the World Cup, do they teach us good values?
Yeah, I think so. I think like you learn about team effort, you know, affection, empathy, there's joy, sharing of emotions, emotional resilience, humility, you know, group cohesion, like compassionate leadership, you know, seeing the captains do their job. There's like social appreciation. There's a lot of cultural aspects of South America that we enjoyed. You know, even watching the decimation of Brazil the other night, for me, it exposed the team for what it was, and a weak team in football. That's just the football piece. The actual sadness and empathy that went out to especially the children in the crowd who were so upset. I think that's something that creates a real interest and you know, a certain type of communication or empathy from us. Nearly everyone I talked about over here said, especially the women I was talking to who had watched it, said, like, and the poor children, it was terrible.
No, it was terrible. It was one of those moments, you know. I think it was a 3 or 4 nil at the time. But just, you know, the expectation levels and young people there with their families, you know, it must have been horrendous.
Yeah, those cameras captured a picture of a little boy with glasses that was particularly cute and crying, felt so bad for him, and it is horrendous. But then look, that's the highs and lows of sport. That's you know, that's normal life, and I think that's what makes it doesn't cause any harm, really. I suppose that's something that we can relate to. It just means feel comfortable with it, we can get over it. Disappointing, you learn a lesson and you move on. You know, I was reading recently that, you know, when asked about like disappointments or talk about failures and successes, Michael Jordan, the basketball player, the famous basketball player for Chicago Bulls, said he can count, he had counted and he knew the number of shots he'd missed for final penalty shootouts in basketball, the amount of contracts he'd lost or the amount of championship games he'd lost. And he just said, like, but successes were where I had more of the games that I won than I lost, but I have to know the ones that I've lost in order to really value when I've achieved and been successful. And I thought that kind of said an awful lot about the man, but it also says an awful lot about sport, that you feel the disappointment and pain when something doesn't happen for you, your team don't go through, or it's your home team and it's not successful. But when it does happen, then the elation is just absolutely momentous.
Yeah, you appreciate the highs because you've also experienced the lows. And I suppose for children as well, it's no harm that they endure a bit of disappointment during their early years, because like that, they'll get to appreciate victory and better times when they come to them.
Absolutely. And I think it makes them more determined. Like they garner an interest in the team that like sparked a certain emotion in them that isn't just happiness. Like with children, I read some research recently, if you tell children all the time, you're wonderful, you're clever, you're brilliant. There's research done in the States that shows they won't make so much of an effort anymore, and they don't really think they can do any better.
Parents, I hope parents are listening to that.
But if you tell them to be mindful of actually, this is what you did, or this is the exercise you did, or this is what can happen, it's not always good. The research showed that they worked harder.
Mm. So, and there's a certain stress level as well. It's not just, we say, at events like the World Cup. Obviously, we weren't there. But I'm just looking at the photographs recently of Kate Middleton at Wimbledon, and she was clearly stressed out by what was going on centre court. But all of this stress and anxiety, can it be good for us?
I think it's a certain passive stress or anxiety. I think it's something that we go through for a few minutes or through something that is, you know, for an hour or whatever the match goes on. It's not a deep-rooted stress. Like, we're far more mindful and aware of our stresses and what pushes our buttons now, I think, than we were even 4 years ago at the last World Cup. I think, you know, psychology and mental health is far more prevalent in Irish culture and society, definitely, and being taken care of ourselves. So I don't think that the sport really, I think it's a minor stress, but I think the energy and the positive feelings that you can get from sport far outweigh the difficulties. And with Wimbledon, you know it's a certain set game. It's like, you know, it's going to be best of three sets or five sets or whatever. It's going to finish. It's going to be over. And you've more interest. It's great interest, I think, in Wimbledon this year, especially with the characters and then the old new generation coming through. And Federer playing Djokovic was like a perfect way to finish the championship. I thought that was also a brilliant game.
I'm just wondering, Ian, has sport taken the place of religion in terms of us feeling part of something?
Don't think so. I think we always say that in Ireland, that religion, whenever we get a real interest at the moment, because we're so disappointed with religion and maybe some of the organisational features of our society in the last few years, we look to that. But I think it's more, there's been a huge promotion of sport in Ireland in the last, I think since the Special Olympics was held there, I thought it was been on an upward trajectory. And we, you know, great personalities like McIlroy, and, you know, the fact that GAA is on Sky now, it's probably, sport plays a massive part of Irish life, and people are definitely getting fitter and more engaged. Also, like, media and its coverage of it and promotion of sport, like all sport, you know, sport for the disabled and sport, women's sport has been increasing, you know, exponentially, I think, over the last few years. And that's why we saw far more interest from, you know, all aspects of culture in the World Cup this year.
Well, Ian, thank you for joining us there with your ruminations on the World Cup. Have you a view on what's going to happen on Sunday?
I think Argentina have actually got better every round. They seem more organised, and no one would have thought, I think, from the first few games that they were going to do it. But Klose is on fire, and I think that Germany might nip it.
All right, okay. Ian Gargan from Imagine Health, thank you for joining us this morning. And plenty of you have been in touch about your World Cup highlights. And Brown Dawn in Drumcondra says his World Cup highlight was après match. Brilliant. Have watched them all again on the RTE player. Well, we'll pick one of those après match clips now. And it's this one in which they're trying to find a replacement for the irreplaceable Johnny Giles.
All right, well, I'm hearing that we have a bit of a crisis because John Giles is unavailable for our next match.
Oh, no, John.
He certainly won't be taking that game on its merits, huh? But here are the options to replace him, all the other panellists. First off, Didi.
No, not Didi, no. Now, you know what? He actually had the temerity to disagree with me once live, on air. Mm. I had to take him aside and say, Didi, you put your foot in the doo-doo, and that's a down with the ED.
Yeah, fair enough.
Who says doo-doo? What are you, five, Eamon?
Sadlier? He's a bit Dunphy light, isn't he?
He is. He's a bit moany.
Yeah, just because you have an opinion and play for Millwall doesn't mean you're me.
Yeah, indeed. What about Kenny Cunningham?
That guy? No.
I don't think so. I was in studio with him last week. He nearly set fire to the place with his eyebrows, Bill.
Yeah. What about Ronnie Whelan? I tell you something about Ronnie. He looks at me like he thinks I'm an idiot. Okie doke. Brad Friedel? He looks like he's escaped from somewhere, doesn't he?
Alcatraz.
Yeah, okie doke. And then we have Ozzy and Mike.
Yeah, listen, Bill, don't mind. They're all spoofers. Nobody wants to see them. You know what? We've got the show business, this thing up. Yeah. We've got to crank it up, baby. We've got to park the bus and get out the Ferrari.
What do you suggest, Eamon?
Well, I have a cunning plan.
Oh, yes, some classic après match there. Will we take another one? We will, sure, why not? It's Friday. This is a reimagined interview between the one and only Gabe Byrne and the aforementioned Johnny Giles.
Hello to you. Today I'm joined by John Giles, he of the football and all that sort of thing. There he is, there, doing that. Does John Giles believe in God?
Well, I think you'd have to believe in a lad God there, Bill. Yeah.
It's gay, actually.
Who's gay?
I'm gay.
He said around there, Bill.
Moving on, if you will. Does John Giles see God as a benevolent God? Let me explain that to you, you ignoramus. Is God good?
Well, God was a bit before my time, Bill, but Jesus the Son, he was a great player. He was a great player. He could play anywhere. He could turn water into wine. He could turn fishes into loaves. He could turn the sixpence. He could walk on water.
Well, he didn't lick it off the stones, did he, John? Well done to you. Well done to you, John. That's all we have time for. A lovely, 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 lovely job. Well done to you. Well done to you.
All right, thanks, sir, Bill.
If you call me Bill one more time, I shall kick you in the shins and shove your head through that wall.
The John Murray Show on RTÉ Radio 1.